Pierre Lumumba here at the Lukenya Hillside Camp in Machakos County in Kenya. Today we discuss an iconic figure, Kwame Nkrumah, known to Africa and the world as the Osagyefo, and voted as perhaps the greatest African politician of all time. The Osagyefo's history and impact in Ghana and in Africa is amazing. Yet there is a sense in which the Osagyefo ended up tragically. Tragically in the sense that he did not run the full course. We must look at the history of the Osagyefo as pioneering. Born in Nkoroful, in Ghana, taught by great teachers such as James Emmons Kwejiragri in Achimota College, went to the United States, met people who were to form him or to help him form and to have a different worldview in terms of Pan-Africanism. So that in 1945, we see Nkrumah at the 5th Pan-African Conference in Manchester, and he's present there with great minds such as W.E.B. Du Bois. When he comes to Ghana, he finds that the political environment has already been forming under the leadership of individuals like Dankwa with the United Gold Coast People's Party, UGCC, which he joins. But what frustrates him is that these individuals are gradualists. They think that independence, the fruit of independence, will ripen and will fall in its own good time. So he forms his own party, the Convention People's Party, which is socialist in orientation. And being socialist, he finds himself inclined to ideas that are being propagated by individuals in Russia, in China, and in Cuba, and those spaces. Those are the people with whom he feels comfortable. And there is a pull and push within Ghana itself, so that when Ghana regains independence on the 6th day of March 1957, Nkrumah's orientation as a Pan-Africanist is already clear. And in his speech, he says the independence of Ghana means nothing if the rest of Africa is not free. Very quickly, he becomes one of the pioneers, and in 1958, he holds a major meeting in Accra, Ghana, in order to galvanize the whole idea about African unity. He does not stop there. In 1960, with the King of Morocco, they hold a major meeting in Casablanca, Morocco. And this gives birth to what is normally referred to as the Casablanca Group, the group that says Africa must unite now. There is another group which has been created largely by the colonizers called the Monrovia Group. This Monrovia Group is led by individuals who are inclined towards a loose African unity. So when the meeting is convened, and people never say this, the first meeting of the OAU, or what was to become the OAU, was to be held either in Cairo, hosted by Gamal Abdel Nasser, or in Accra, hosted by the Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah. Because there was a little contestation, Haile Selassie then offered to hold in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, and it was held in the month of May, from the 22nd through to the 25th. Two groups, Casablanca, Africa Unity Now, Monrovia, let us be gradual. Ultimately, you have the OAU, which is a loose union, which disappoints Nkrumah. One need only listen and read his speech on that day. We must leave here with one government. We must leave here with one military. We must leave here with one foreign policy. We must leave here because if we don't, the colonizer is going to ensure that we are divided and we fight amongst each other, and ultimately we will be confused. He says, when people talk about the change of boundaries, He says, but why are we changing boundaries? These are only administrative. We are going to be united. In 1964, Gamal Abdel Nasser hosts a meeting at which he is present, and they agree we do not interfere with the boundaries. And in 1965, Nkrumah hosts a meeting in Accra, and he believes that people are going to come out of that place united. He has also written a book, Neocolonialism, The Last Stage of Imperialism. And that is where his troubles begin. His troubles are both external and internal. Internal, there are those who are saying the Osagyefo is creating a personality cult. The Osagyefo is imposing one state rule. The Osagyefo is borrowing too much money in major projects such as the Akosombo Dam, the Tema Port. Ghana is too indebted. Ghanaians are becoming poor. The Osagyefo is not allowing traditional rulers to thrive. The Osagyefo is spending too much time in Africa. The Osagyefo is sacrificing Ghana for Africa. And therefore, this man must go. So internal contradictions are taking place. And the Osagyefo is involved in Congo in order to save Patrice Emery Lumumba. He tries to broker a union which involves Modibo Keita in Mali. So there are a combination of factors, and that is how tragedy begins to set in. And it's instructive that this is such a selfless individual that he is beginning to see a broader picture. He believes that a united Africa is going to be the only thing that will save it from neocolonization. And you only see his books. Africa must unite now. He's telling the rest of Africa. He's shuttling across Africa. But Europe and America are saying, the CIA are saying, no, we cannot allow this man to teach other Africans bad manners. Africa must remain in control. So what do they do? In the month of February 1966, Osagyefo is traveling to China. He's actually on his way to Hanoi in Vietnam. And during the conversation, he is told, do you know that your administration has been overthrown? You are no longer the president of Ghana. And of course, the entire process of changing Africa is cut short. Joseph Arthur Ankrah takes over from him. And when that happens, one of the most devastating things, all Nkrumah's speeches banned. All Nkrumah's books banned. You are never to hear nor to read anything written by Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah. Luckily, he has a friend in the neighborhood, Ahmed Sekou Touré. So he comes back and he is in Guinea, in Conakry, and Ahmed Sekou Touré announces to the world that Nkrumah is now the co-president of Guinea. So Nkrumah stays in that space, agonizing as he sees what is happening in the neighborhood. Of course, the coup is in 1966. There is an attempt in 1967 to have a counter coup. And in 1966, one of the people who are killed during that is Kwasi Kotoka. And if you go to Ghana, the airport is actually named for Kwasi Kotoka, the Kotoka Airport. After that, of course, in 1969, we have General Kwasi Afrifah. Coups become the order of the day in Ghana because Nkrumah has gone. And the Nkrumah legacy remains alive. And in 1972, during the presidency of Ignatius Kutu Achempong, Nkrumah is rehabilitated. His speeches are now to be listened to again. His books are back. And the rehabilitation of Kwame Nkrumah starts in earnest. But it is important now to contextualize, why was it necessary to eliminate Kwame Nkrumah? it was necessary to eliminate Kwame Nkrumah because the neo-colonizers had taken the view that the only way to ensure that Africa remains under their control, the only way to ensure that African resources are resources that are retained, was to ensure that Africa was not united. And at that time, it is instructive to appreciate that Nkrumah was being accused of being a communist. Ahmed Ben Bella is accused of being a communist. Modibo Keita is said to be a communist. Amilcar Cabral is said to be a communist. So Nkrumah is seen as the father figure of communism. And the Convention People's Party is the breeding ground of socialism. And it must be seen in the context of the Cold War that there is a divide where there are those who are inclined to the Soviet Union and therefore to be East and therefore Marxist-Leninist, and there are those who are dyed-in-the-wool capitalists. And Nkrumah is seen in this vein and therefore must be eliminated to torpedo the entire project of African unity. So Nkrumah's plight must always be seen in that way. And those of us who can be described as Nkrumah apologists will always be accused of being blind to the fact that he was projecting personality cultism. And I don't think so. My own view was Nkrumah's dedication, conviction, and enthusiasm entailed personal sacrifice. And this is very easy to confuse with what can be characterized as personality cultism. Nkrumah was already able to see that if in these embryonic days of independence you allow people to come with things that are called political parties and which are organized around religion and ethnicity, you are only going to undermine the state. Nkrumah was already able to see that you needed energy in order to industrialize. So all the things that we are talking about now, and it's instructive that when Africa was talking about Africa Agenda 2063 and Africa Continental Free Trade Area, the then chair of the African Union Commission, South African, Kosasa and Dlamini Zuma, wrote a letter to Nkrumah in his grave, apologizing to Nkrumah, telling we Africans made a mistake. What you saw in 1957 is what we are implementing now. And that is why they say Nkrumah never dies. The Osagyefo never dies, because his ideas are alive today and as relevant today as they were on the 6th day of March 1957 when he said the independence of Ghana means nothing until Africa is united. That is the Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah. Ladies and gentlemen, Africa, something new always come out of it. And these are the ideas that we are trying to share in the hope that Africa will be properly understood. But let us see each other next time as we continue the discussion. Thank you very much.